Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
Hello, and welcome back to another episode of the Chase Thomas podcast. Day two back from the wedding, the honeymoon, broken foot, this, that, and the other here in Knoxville, Tennessee. But look, we keep moving. We get back on the podcast grind. There's content to be made. And I'm joined back-to-back days, basically. Two folks who were at my wedding, Matt, last night. Stats by Will tonight. Will, good evening, sir. How are you?
I'm doing well. Your wedding was beautiful. Huge congrats. Not related to your wedding, I'd like to issue a national apology for creating the Anthony Richardson creative pass or make a 5-yard out pass challenge, which has proven to be really difficult. This is sort of in line with some other ones I've issued in the past, such as a Cade McNamara complete a 20-yard pass challenge, really tough one. KD Johnson make a 3 challenge. That one was a difficult one to see unfold. So apologies to Anthony Richardson. I think he might be cursed. Unfortunately for Anthony Richardson, he has sped run the September Heisman narrative at a pace we have never seen before.
I feel bad for these kids though, man. Like, you see it and it's just, yeah, the guy hasn't really, like, he just has one good
game. It's not his fault that I don't really think that they are using him correctly.
Well, let's hope that continues for at least one more week.
Yeah,
Will.
Fingers crossed.
I'm worried about friend of the pod, Cedric, not to be mistaken with your cat, Cedric, but Cedric Tillman not being available for this one. I don't know. That's a little concerning. That's some very Tennessee type thing where it's like, oh, that Hendon has to break in a new receiver during Florida week and the go-to safe route is not there. And Havoc, I mean, I think he's like 41 touchdowns and 2 picks as a starter at UT. Like, this would be the game to implode on that. Like, it's just, I'm very nervous. And it's interesting to see all the national folks who are just, everyone's just like, oh, we don't see how this is not a blowout. Like, this is, this should be a Tennessee blowout in this one. And every Tennessee fan is just like, I could see us losing in this way and this way and this way. And no one feels good, Will. All week, well, no one feels good.
Maybe it's just like, maybe removing myself from it for a couple of years kind of helped me see it at, like, the national paper. It's like, I do think Tennessee Ram, you know, just easily wins. But it's also like, if they were to lose, it would be extraordinarily UT. I mean, of all years, this year in particular, to do it. But it's just like, I don't really have any nervousness because in my head, logistically, it's just like, any team that almost loses to South Florida is probably not good.
Yes.
So I'm going with that logic, even though they did beat Utah.
It's just weird.
But the Utah win looks real fluky in retrospect.
I mean, 16-17. It's just, the history's there. Like, it's until you get off this, I need to see it first. If they get to 4-0, then you're looking at maybe Alabama, Tennessee and Neyland in October, both teams undefeated potentially. I mean, goodness.
I still think the road LSU trip is, I know, like, LSU.
I'm not as concerned about that one. Is it weird? I'm more concerned about Florida than I am LSU on the road now.
No, but well, okay. Florida's quarterback is probably more dangerous to what Tennessee runs. But I don't know. It's just like playing in Tiger Stadium is a scary proposition to me. Always, it's sort of like, with my Michigan background, playing in Kinnick, no matter how bad Iowa's offense is, playing in Kinnick always scares me.
Absolutely. Well, it was a great weekend, Will. I was glad that you and Carly made the trek up to Carter, Tennessee.
Beautiful area.
It was gorgeous, but it was also perfect weather. We got really lucky on that front. I was really concerned about, like, making sure to see everybody because I was, like, getting pulled in, like, 75 different directions. Like, you don't realize how hard it is to make sure you stop and see everybody because you're like, oh, this is so nice. All these people made the trek over. And so people, Wyoming, California, Georgia, Tennessee. And you're like, oh, God, did I talk to everybody? And I'm, like, going through the Rolodex in my head of, like, I think I talked to everybody, right? Like, I talked to everybody. And it was great to put a face to a name with your lovely wife. And we'll do the double soon. over there in Oak Ridge. Now that you are an Oak Ridge Wildcat officially, you went to your first game. And of course, it was the game that I was gone for, the first one I missed this season due to the writing rehearsal. But how was your experience at Blankenship Field, Will?
It's pretty good. I had been to one like years before when punter Joe, formerly of UT, now at Memphis, played for Farragut. The Wildcat growl for first downs is still a little strange to me. It's very, it's thematically correct, but it's, and I don't quite understand the railroad theme.
Okay.
But I think it's a good experience on the whole, and the field is really nice for high school.
Yeah.
Like one of the probably top two, top three nicest I've been to for Tennessee.
It's a really, really great field. It's separate from the high school, so they have more space and they can kind of do their own thing. And then you got Big Ed's Pizza right around the corner, which is top notch, top notch. That's what we got to do. I think that's what we'll do.
I do have two wedding comments really quick.
Okay.
So one
on mine specifically.
One is a question and two is horror stories. Cause you talked about making sure you talk to everyone at your wedding. Mm. So one, did you manage to finish your dinner?
No.
Okay. That is a common theme among in my own wedding and pretty much everybody I've talked to. You get so distracted, you don't end up eating very much.
Right.
It's a fatal flaw, which is unfortunate.
Yeah. The only way to do it is I think we would have had to eat before we came out for like the introduction of a husband and wife. I think the only way we could have eaten is if they're like, hey, here's your food. Here's your plate. Eat this before y'all go out and do your thing.
Yeah. It's really tough. It's hard to balance. But that, and then my second one, that's the story about, because you mentioned trying to talk to everybody. So you're not going to be shocked here. I'm not a great talker in public. But I was trying to, at our wedding, talk to everybody who was there. And the literal first table I went to was, you know, a couple of my good friends. And one of them had just started dating somebody new. And so I don't remember what I called that guy. But I think it was Mark is what I called him or something. And his name is Tyler.
Were you in the ballpark?
I was not even close. His name is Tyler.
Oh no.
I instantly felt so stupid. And that was the end of me reaching out to other tables. They just came to our table the rest of the night. Cause I was like, I'm not very good at this. So all of you come to me.
I mean, I respect that. I've done that. I've told people ahead of time where I'm like when you reach your 30s and you've met so many people, your brain starts doing this thing where, look, the brain's full, man. The memory card is locking up a lot of names. And when I have to memorize all these sports names and everything else, there's only so much. So it's like, I gotta think whether or not I'm going to see you again. Like, how often am I going to see you? So if I think I'm going to see you more than once, and I'll make the concerted effort to retain it. If not, I don't know. It's in one ear. But then I have the dumb brain stuff where, I mean, there's one, I won't mention who it was, but there is one person at this wedding who I will never remember their first name. I will always, like, I have thought it was something else. It's very close, but my brain has just goes to that. And there's a reason I will never say that name first, because I'll never be 100% certain if I'm saying the right one out loud, because it's close, but I don't see them as that person. And for whatever reason, my brain has locked in that they are this other name, which is not accurate, and I will never be comfortable with myself to do it, because I did it once and it was so embarrassing, and I was like, I can't do this again. That's out. So I understand where you're coming from on that front. There's nothing worse. You just want to die.
Very scary.
But either way, I'm glad you had a fun time. I will say too, like, I wasn't prepared to get hit in the face with cake. That's like a weird thing. You have to prepare for, and like, shout out to Samantha, who did a really great job. Big handful right in the face. For me though, I was like, I don't want to throw cake in your face. And I remember telling her, I'm like, I don't, this feels weird. I don't want to hit you in the face with cake. This seems bad. And just like, it was not great. It was not my best pull there, but you know, you got to do what you got
to
do.
You have to do it for pictures too, which wasn't really, I don't know. We did it. It wasn't like, so there is a picture of me when I was, I'll have to dig it up for podcast purposes. When I was 1 year old at my first birthday party, and they had like a little cake for me. Mm-mm. And instead of, you know, eating the cake like a normal person, I just smashed my face in it.
Right.
Because I presumably that was all I thought to do at a year old. So we were hoping to recreate that at the wedding, and luckily we did not.
There you go. Well, ostensibly, as always, this is a college basketball podcast here on the Friday edition of the Chase Thomas Podcast here on the Blue Wire Pod Network. Don't forget, folks, you can check us out on YouTube. Go check us out on youtube.com/Chase Thomas Podcast. New episodes go up live, so you can watch it live as we put them up every single afternoon on the YouTube page. Like, subscribe, thumbs up, all that good stuff if you're watching on YouTube. As always, you can also listen on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Make sure you hit that subscribe button so that you never miss a episode, new episodes daily. After my longest week away from doing any kind of recording of any kind over 7 years. So that was weird. The combination of the injury, the wedding, the honeymoon. I was out of commission for a little bit here on the podcast, but for very good, some very good reasons, the best reasons, and some not so great before those very good things, like a broken foot, which I would not recommend, 0 out of 10. Will, first thing, your favorite, the Big Ten. People forget, Will, big Ten guy is what people
call my big beautiful boys.
Yeah.
I need teams that look like, I need teams full of front courts that are like 6'9", 275, have huge arms but have zero muscle definition. That's my Big Ten basketball.
I like it. Well, is or does the Big Ten look like an 8-team bid for you in March as it stands right now, Will Warren?
I think that's a bit of a stretch, and this is based on Lenardi's latest bracketology, which again, I appreciate that he does this. Helps the content machine roll. Gives us something to talk about in late September, one day after Earth, Wind, and Fire September yearly anniversary.
But speaking of, I missed the Demi videos year over year.
Did he not do one this year?
No, he retired. He did a whole video not too long ago that he said, stop asking me. And he did it a couple months ahead of time of like, it's not coming. Don't tweet at me. Where's the video? He retired, which I get, man. He did that for what, 5 years in a row?
And there's a pretty lot big productions.
Yes, like it's a whole thing. He brought in a choir, I remember one time. The guy, he's had a winding career because I first found him on the Gilmore Guys podcast years and years ago, and then he's doing videos and all kinds of other stuff, but that is neither here nor there. Great show. Go listen to Gilmore Guys if you're ever watching Gilmore Girls. It's great to listen along with and watch Gilmore Girls because it's great.
Great show. The Big Ten, I think, is going to be down as a whole this year. That was a smooth transition right there. But it's down in the sense that, so like, generally they battle the Big 12 for number one overall. I think the Big 12 is clearly the best conference in college basketball this year. And now it's like number two, I think the SEC has got the edge. And then it's kind of like Big 10 or ACC for number three. I honestly think it's more likely.
You mean Big 12 or ACC for number three?
No, Big 10. I think Big 12 is number one.
Have Big 12 number one. Okay.
Yeah. Big 12, SEC, then sort of Big 10/ACC three. I honestly think it's more likely the Big 10 gets six than they do eight.
Who are your six?
It's going to be some collection, and I feel pretty confident about these six at like 75% or higher for all of them. So Illinois, who I think is the best team in the Big 10, Indiana, Michigan, Michigan State, Purdue, questionably Iowa. I know Iowa lost, you know, Keegan Murray, but Chris Murray is more or less Keegan Murray a year younger. So we'll see how that works out. And I think those six are pretty likely to get in. I mean, could Iowa be unexpectedly bad? Sure. I mean, their defense is never good. And maybe Chris Murray isn't as good as Keegan. Could Purdue really struggle to replace what they lost? Yeah. Could Michigan State underachieve? Could Michigan underachieve? Sure. But I think those six are pretty likely to get in.
You don't think Ohio State's likely?
I do not think Ohio State's likely. I don't like this Ohio State team. And not just because of personal ties. They lost 85% of their scoring from last year. And sort of the dirty secret is that Holtman has not really recruited very well. Their average star ranking on the team is three. Which is shocking for, I mean, this is Ohio State we're talking about. Thad Matta used to pull in five stars pretty easily. And it has been a minute since Ohio State pulled in like an agreed upon top 10 guy. Holtman, I think Holtman kind of gets a little bit of a bad rap from Ohio State fans because he's not Thad Matta. But the recruiting has fallen off to the point where they're getting out recruited by Purdue. And look, Matt Painter, great coach. has this weird ability to find every 7'5" giant in various villages in Eastern Europe. But if you're getting out recruited by a team in West Lafayette, Indiana, you have a problem.
Yeah.
Especially if you're Ohio State. So I don't know. I don't feel great about them. I don't know that I'm ready to commit in Maryland, suddenly turning it around in year one of Kevin Willard. I do like the roster more than the average, but I'm not there yet with them. They're going to be close though. Not really convinced by Rutgers. Their coach is excellent, obviously, and they will be great defensively again, but they are just a nightmare offensively every season. And I've been on the record as saying Wisconsin's going to be bad. I do not think this Wisconsin team is good. So
what about Penn State or Minnesota with their new coaches and their rebuilding project? Still a year or two away?
A year or two away. I think it's going to be a bit. Jalen Pickett on Penn State is awesome. I'm excited to see him play. And like the good thing about Big Ten basketball is like there are some abject teams. Like I don't think Nebraska is good. I think Minnesota is going to be a tough watch. But every single team in the league has like one guy that's pretty interesting. Even Northwestern, which is a program that really should be banished to like faraway regions of the earth. Boo Booey is a really fun player. Very good guy. I think they're six. I wouldn't be shocked to see a seventh arise. I would be pretty surprised if eight made it, though.
All right. I like it. The one and done. It looks like Will Warren might be on its last legs here. Reported this week that it looks like NBA rule change might be going away. And that was like always the big misconstrue with college basketball and the NBA is that like this is an NBA rule. It's not a college thing. So when people be like, oh, college basketball needs to get rid of the one and done. It's like, well, it's actually not a college basketball thing. And I think most coaches probably want to get rid of it too. If I were to ask, like, I think that's a model where it's like, no, it would be easier for the sport to navigate if players who were able to go straight to the pros were able to go straight and not have to do the one and done stuff. Like, I think most coaches would say, yeah, I'd rather take the continuity and have a bunch of guys who I think will be on this roster for the for several years. And then there's the other kind of people who are like, well, it's still good to have Zion in the sport for the eyeballs for college basketball, even if it is for a year. I get both sides, but I think if push comes to shove and they go back in the NBA, gets rid of the age restriction, it goes back to 18. I mean we already knew ahead of time, like Kobe, Kevin Garnett, the guys who were gonna make it are gonna make it at 18 with that jump. Is it hard? Obviously, but I don't think it's that big of a difference between jumping at 18 versus jumping at 19 to the pros. It just is what it is, and it was kind of silly that this was created in the first place. Now if you want to do what I'm hoping for is kind of like the college baseball thing where you're in, and if you don't like where you're drafted, you can go to college and then just kind of build up your value over the 3 year span. And then re-enter the draft. If you're not happy with where you ended up getting drafted, that would be super cool. I think that would be a fun part, maybe a fun wrinkle, for a lot of kids, and just give kids more options. And that's a good thing where it's like, hey, let me get the intel and see where I'm at. If not, all right, then I'm going to go play college basketball for a good program for a couple of years, and then it's the one and done, just kind of gets phased out that way. I don't know. I think by and large though, this needed to end. And if it does end up going away, I think we can all move forward because that's probably it. And it's not going to come back. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's a good thing that this goes away. Not really much to say here. I like your concept actually of the college baseball model, though I would adjust it to be if you get drafted or undrafted, whatever it is that you commit to. If you go to college, it should be two. I think 2 years is the proper midpoint of like, if you're going to commit 2 years, it's kind of like a JUCO, right? So it's kind of like you're still probably not, doing the full four, but a 2 year commitment to me means a lot more than one. Like you actually have to go to class. You actually have to really commit to being part of the program if you're willing to be there for 2 years. I will miss the strange aspect of like getting to see Zion in a Duke uniform or Anthony Davis for a year at UK. But I think this is going to make the opportunities better on both sides. Like 18-year-olds won't have to slug it out for a year somewhere they don't really want to be. Like I feel like the anti side of this are people who are like, well, it was awesome when Zion played at Duke, or like Anthony taking UK to that title. Yeah, it was, but it's like, think about like Brandon Boston. I think Brandon Boston could like realistically could have been a top 5 or 10 pick had he never played college basketball. Would that have worked out for the team that drafted him top 5 or top 10? Probably not. But that cost him a lot of money. Patrick Baldwin Jr. cost himself a ton of money by having to spend a year at Milwaukee. Cases like that, where if they were allowed to just go to the draft, they would have, you know, not lost that money. They would have had those opportunities. And I think teams are a lot less scared now of taking an 18-year-old in the NBA than they would have been even 6 years ago. And for on the college side, like we said, that's now going to make it for those people who actually want to be there. I mean, like, can a player still leave after a year if they unexpectedly, you know, pop off? Like, a, like say a recruit in like the 70s ends up with like, you know, an all Big Ten season or an all Big East season. And then it's like, oh, they're a first rounder now. Yeah, sure. That happens. But this is no longer going to be like the third overall recruit goes to Arkansas for a year and like leaves as soon as he can. And I think that's a net positive for college basketball and a net positive for team chemistry.
Yeah. Well, we'll see ultimately what happens here. It seems like it's coming down the pike, and that is going to be where things go. I'm throwing this at you, Will, where I saw Bob Huggins up for the Basketball Hall of Fame. And again, this is silly because the Basketball Hall of Fame should not be a thing. It should be NBA, college. Like, it should be a separate thing. Like, it's just, it's a mess that this is all joined together. And it's just, it's not how it should be. It's too complicated because there's no rules. Like, anyone who gets worked up about the Hall of Fame for basketball is just absolutely wasting your time. There's no rhyme or reason. It's weird. It doesn't make any sense. Don't worry about it. That being said, I was thinking about it. If we had a college basketball Hall of Fame, just on, like only college basketball coaches and players, does Bob Huggins make the cut? Because I was thinking about that. My first instinct was like, no. But I also thought he's just been really solid for so long. And you think about it and you're like, the dude is, I don't know. Like, he was a tough one. Like, does longevity play a big role? Is he the Frank Gore of college basketball coaches? Where just he was really solid, but never the best coach in the sport. Never really even top three, but he was probably top 10. For a really long time. What does that mean for him as a coach? I don't know. Where are you at with Bob Huggins?
And his I would 100% put him in a Hall of Fame. I don't even think it's close.
I like
because
it.
He's kind of flown under the radar somehow to me as an all-time great, which is, it's like, it's weird to say because so as long as West Virginia wins 5 games this season, he will finish the season with the third most wins by any Division I coach in men's college basketball history.
Oh, wow.
So he'll only be short of Coach K and Jim Boeheim. He's going to pass Calhoun this year. Roy was the only like recently active coach that was close to his tail, but obviously Roy's gone. And then Patino is at 684, but I mean, Huggins is at 916 as I type. So I don't think Patino's going to catch up. So Huggins is very likely to be top three for a really long time, barring, you know, the next sort of wonder coach. But like you said, there's an aspect to it where I don't think he's had a signature March moment. He's never made it to a national title game. He has made 2 Final Fours and 4 Elite Eights, which is that's still pretty good. But the strongest contender for like a March moment is probably him making it at West Virginia when Deshaun Butler's knee exploded and, you know, he's comforting him on the floor. And that's kind of it. Like, there's like none of the Cincinnati runs are really remembered. The one that most people remember is the one that didn't happen when Kenyon Martin got hurt. And they were probably the best team in basketball and then just went out in the second round. Which makes me feel bad for him because he has had a great career. Like, if it were like a one school situation, then I think it might be different. But it's like at Akron, he was great. At Cincy, he was awesome. He was at Kansas State. And then at West Virginia, he was awesome.
I forgot about the Kansas State part.
1 year. Yeah. And I think that was the Michael Beasley year, actually.
Okay.
Which is wild to remember. But I wonder how much longer he's willing to go.
How old is he?
He is 69. So he's not...
Nice.
Nice. He's not getting any shorter in age. He can... It's going to depend on when Boeheim retires. I'm convinced Boeheim is going to coach until he dies.
I mean, much to the chagrin of Syracuse fans, because I don't know if you read the message boards for Q's fans about
they,
the state
they
of the
They seem to be over it.
And they I are it, so they over the Jim Boeheim. Oh, my goodness. It's they like the Bobby Bowden stuff here at Florida State up there in Q's country. Mm-hmm. Oof. JP yeah. Estrella didn't help.
No. I think he – we'll see on that front. But I wonder for Huggs is like – what's left? So is he holding out for like one last great run? Does he want a Big 12 title banner? Like what is left that keeps him going other than just like he can't think of anything else to do? But I appreciate him a lot as an all-time great character in college basketball. We've never had anybody quite like him. One thing I found out recently is that he has done a yearly fish fry in Morgantown for 11 years. And Bob, if you're listening, I want to attend your fish fry, buddy, because that sounds awesome.
I like it. Well, there you go. I think he'll get in ultimately. Seems like he's got a pretty good case. I think he's going
to
be in.
The period of time where the media hated him seems to have subsided. Because that was more like the Kansas State late Cincy era.
Well, there you go. Will. Wrong Coach, a series that do we want to announce anything about the Wrong Coach stuff? That
I'll just be turning this into a series on my blog this year called Yanla Fire My Coach. I think that's how her name is pronounced.
Okay.
Did you ever? I've never seen this show. I just know it exists. A Yanla Fix My Life. I think on like TLC probably. I'm guessing. I've never seen this show. I just know it exists. And
the only TLC show that has my loyalty is 90 Day Fiance.
Okay. Whenever you scroll through like the cable listings and you just see a show that's on for 6 hours and you've never seen it before, and you're just like, huh, I wonder what that show is about. But you never watch it. That's that show.
Okay.
Anyway, let's go on with what the question is about.
No, I like it. Well, this week, and look, this is not a mean-spirited conversation. It's just more of like, hey, there are a multitude of reasons of why coaches work out at some places, why they don't at others. It's tough where you can root for somebody to succeed and by and large, well-meaning, but it does just happen. You're paid a lot of money to win at big time jobs and it just, hey, sometimes you just have to know when to pull the plug or warning signs where you're like, this probably is not going to turn around the way they are hoping it turns around. And this was another one where it's like he was pretty celebrated at the time of his hire where it felt like a really good hire. And NC State, been down for a while. Our next step in our series, is it the wrong coach in Raleigh with Kevin Keats? What do you think by this point? Are you underwhelmed where he's been at NC State to this point? Do you think there is still reason for optimism that he'll get to where this team needs to go? Do you think he is the coach 2 years from now? Like, where are you at with Keats and his job performance to this point?
I'm very firmly out on Kevin Keats. Wrong coach.
Okay. Did you feel that way at the time?
No. Okay. Because like so when he was at UNC Wilmington, they did some objectively great things. Like he never finished anywhere other than first in 3 years there in the CAA, which I know like some people, whenever they hear like a mid-major conference name, they're like, whatever. But like the CAA is a pretty competitive and high variety conference. Like it's rare for teams to go on runs. Like Hofstra, who didn't make the tournament for 20 years, won it 2 times in a row. Like very recently. So it's rare for a team to sustain like really good success. So like for him to do it 3 years in a row and make 2 tournaments back to back, pretty darn good. So at the time I thought it made perfect sense. Like here's a guy who is winning a lot. Like you're not doing the Mark Gottfried thing where you're just doing a retread hire. It was new and fresh and it's really unfortunate that it hasn't worked out. And I'm not going to pretend to know why it hasn't because I'm going to admit, like, I'm not an NC State basketball fan. I don't really follow them very closely. I sort of watch from afar and have been sort of horrified from afar, frankly, at what they've become. But I'm going to say something that is a little hot and could be proven wrong easily.
Okay.
I want to be convinced that there is a coach in high major college basketball that is doing less with more than Kevin Keats.
Oh, wow.
Because think about it this way. Kevin Teets is quietly a very good recruiter.
Mm-hmm.
They have had some stellar pieces come through. Dennis Smith Jr. is sort of the headliner.
Yeah.
But here's some guys that Kevin Teets has recruited. Cam Hayes, great recruit. Terquavion Smith, Shaquille Moore, Manny Bates. They've had like guys that programs really wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And none of them have gotten better after starting to come to NC State. Not one. I mean, like, it's great that Terquavion Smith, for some reason, decided to come back for a second year there. But we're looking at a program that, and this is from year one to now, and obviously COVID affects this a little bit, but this is just their standing in the ACC by conference record. 3rd, 8th, 6th, 9th, 15th.
Going the wrong way.
So basically year one, you have Gottfried's leftovers, right?
Mm-hmm.
They get into the NCAA tournament. By year two, it's starting to be Keats recruits and like the last remnants of the Gottfried era. Every single year after that, it's getting worse and worse and worse. And that points to me to a program that doesn't know what its identity should be, doesn't know where it's going, and cannot seem to get out of its own way. And I've been pretty harsh on some coaches on the show, Bobby Hurley, my number one target. And I feel bad for Keats because I don't think, whenever we talk about coaches, I think it kind of like, it's sort of like the Tom Crean thing we hammered on over and over last year. These guys badly want to win. It's what they want to do more than anything else in the world is win basketball games. Kevin Keats badly wants to win in NC State. And it just has not worked out. He's fired coaches on his staff. He's made full roster turnovers. He's done all sorts of things to make it work out. And it just hasn't. And at this point, it's probably best for them to separate as soon as possible and try something new.
Is that what you think ultimately happens? They separate? Do you think it's this year? Do you think it's next year?
I think it's this year because, I mean, so Bart Torvik's projections, you know, you can't take them as gospel because projections never come out 100% the truth. But let's say they work out as projected. NC State will finish 12th in the ACC. In year six, given the resources they have, because they have a top 40 budget in college basketball, which I don't think a lot of people know, mid-pack in the ACC, easily able to achieve like...
They care. Like NC State is basketball country. Yes. Those fans care. They like care. It's a budget. Yeah, it's I mean, a priority. Like,
and not to make an apples or, you know, apples-apples comparison with the football program, but the football program is pretty darn good. And
baseball program's great.
Yeah, baseball program's great. And let's not pretend like those two programs have unlimited resources to do really well in the ACC. They're doing more with less. NC State basketball is the opposite. And so, I mean, like, genuinely, when you think of the ACC this year, how many programs can you name that are going to be definitively worse than NC State? Because I can name one, and that's Pittsburgh.
I'd probably because, say Clemson.
Like, the rest,
Clemson probably, right?
No, I don't think so. Clemson's going to be...
Pitt?
Pittsburgh is worse.
Mm.
Louisville might be worse. I think Louisville's just got such a big hole to dig out of. And that might be it. Maybe Syracuse, but Boeheim kind of has a floor of... I know like they're not going to be good, but he has a floor of...
Yeah, Wake Forest being really good now with Forbes being a home run hire for them. That's not great for NC State too.
And that's the thing is like... So let's say they fire Keats, which I think is the odds-on favorite. Forbes should be the top call, but it's going to be it because like their budget is just higher than Wake Forest by design. I don't know that he would jump.
Yeah.
So then it gets to like, all right, I think any of the next three would be good hires. And frankly, you know, look, it's always a spinning the wheel situation of like roulette works out for you or it doesn't. Like I thought Archie Miller was going to be freaking fantastic in Indiana and that didn't happen. So any of these three, I think, are worth the call. Like Mike Rhodes at VCU, Richie McKay at Liberty. And then the biggest upside hire of them all, Kim English at George Mason, depending on how they do this.
Hold on. No, we're not allowing this because Kim is on hold until Rick Barnes retires. Like that is how that works. We have dibs. Kim English is the head coach in waiting at Tennessee until Rick Barnes is ready to move on.
But part of the problem for them is that they really should have done it. They had an easy natural out after they finished dead last in the ACC this past season. That was the natural separation point to me.
Yeah.
But now, think about, because like when you think about the hottest hot seats coming into the season, I know you don't think of NC State and Georgetown traditionally as going after the same players or the same pool. Mm. But when I think about the two programs, they're going to be going after basically the exact same coaches. Like Georgetown's list is going to be like Ed Cooley, Richie McKay, Mike Rhodes, Kim English. Those are going to be like four of the top good guys that they can reasonably get. And NC State shares three members of that list with them. So, and Georgetown is going to pay more and be in a better situation. So that's kind of like you waited a little too late, guys. So I don't know. They still should be able to get a good hire, but
Will Wade?
I think Will Wade's going to be catching that show cause real soon.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, my lone comment there, because Pat 40, way to go, buddy, misreporting which LSU infraction it was today. Whenever it is Will Wade's time to face his reckoning, Donnie Tindall better be ready to press that lawsuit button if Will Wade's not getting 11 years.
Donnie Tindall. I think he's at Chipola Community College now.
Is he not still doing the wrestling promotion? He was for a minute.
I think he's coaching at a community college, Chipola. That's like the...
He's coaching at Chipotle. He is helping them make the chicken. Donnie Tindall is working on the fajita veggies. He's working the line. And we love to see it.
Are you a Chipotle guy?
Yeah. Bar Burritos is better and Dos Pros is better. But
that was the saddest I've ever heard anyone give.
People really love having a take on Chipotle. Like, they either love it or hate it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a period of my life where I loved it, but now I would say it's probably third in the pecking order.
I had an old roommate who had it for lunch and dinner every single day.
That's extreme.
They catered his birthday. I got to the house and the whole house had like a full-on like... just Chipotle catering thing. It was
that's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, when you spend like, if you do the math, it's like a couple grand over the course of a year just on Chipotle. But you know, you got to do what you got to do. And hey, bachelor men, what are you gonna do? We're fending for ourselves. We're doing our best out there in our 20s in Atlanta. Anything new on the Tennessee front? We'll see what happens with Ruben. Do we know how to pronounce his last name out of Africa? Do we know?
My guess was Chinyelu, but Chinyelu, okay. I've been wrong on those like more often than not. So yeah. I'm going to defer to whenever he prefers to announce. But no, the SEC TV schedule got released this week, which is like, that's one of those things where you only care about it if you cover the team. Like, if you're a fan, you should not care about the SEC TV schedule release.
Mm-hmm.
But like a true sicko, here I am. But I will say... One, I was a little perturbed by the home Kentucky game, which is the Chris Lofton retirement game as well, being a noon tip on a Saturday. That's a real bummer. Like, that
is it a bummer? I like noon tips for basketball. I'm cozy. It's cold. I have my hoodie on. It's perfect. I like the noon tips.
But like, for me, when it's Kentucky and when it's Tennessee, and when both of those teams are very likely to enter the season top 10, that's a game day opportunity to me. Like that's like a 5-7 p.m. tip. Everybody gets all crazy during the day, comes in, and the crowd is bonkers. They raise number 5 to the rafters, and then like it's on from there. Or a CBS game. But the biggest offense is the opening game of the season, Road Ole Miss, December 28th, which is a Wednesday, 5 p.m. Eastern tip off. I'm doing the Brian Windhorst thing now. Why is that? I understand, like, nobody's at work or at school or whatever, but like, come on, guys. 5 p.m. is such a stupid time to tip off a weekday game.
Yeah.
And especially, and this probably
given. So, what's the why is that for you? Why is the why is that?
I don't know. Well, okay. Look, Windhorst never explained his. So, that's true. Tennessee football, it's not like they're going to be playing on December 28th in all likelihood, but I mean,
that January 6th, like, we're going, our New Year 6th, excuse me.
Yeah, January 6th, big day for Tennessee football fans. Big day. We're not going to explain that one. But like, I don't know, man. Tipping off a basketball game in the middle of bowl season at 5 p.m. is a great way to get nobody to watch your basketball game.
I would say in general, but Tennessee fans will do it. Like, Tennessee fans are going to watch.
But it's like, I don't know. I hated that. So I'm a little confused at how the SEC is handling their scheduling because so opening weekend, which is I think January 7, there are two CBS games. One of them is like Vanderbilt Ole Miss, which begs the question why.
Right.
But after that, there are four SEC on CBS games. And like to me, when I was growing up, SEC on CBS was a weekly occurrence for like 10 weeks straight.
Mm-hmm.
You got to be able to put your premier games on the biggest networks. Take advantage of that contract, you know? I don't know. I haven't been thrilled with how they've been promoting the biggest teams in the conference because it's like there were so many Auburn games last year, and Auburn was number one in the freaking country. That got buried on ESPNU. What are we doing here? Like, if you have the number one team in the country, they should be on ESPN or ESPN2 or, God forbid, SEC Network every single time they play a game. Like, the Big Ten understands this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when Purdue was number one, even remember when Purdue was number one? Even when that happens, they're on ESPN or ESPN2 every time they play.
Yeah,
it does. That's got to SEC's got to take it more serious. But that's all besides the point. I think Chinyelu is interesting because he did willingly fly out of South Africa to go to Florida for his visit.
Mm.
So, but I think that means it's a 2-horse race, and Tennessee seems to have the lead. So. Which is big because, I mean, again, I don't know as much about recruiting as like the draft guys do, but the draft guys all seem to indicate if he were to be ranked, it'd be in the 50 to 75 range. And that's another classic Tennessee get.
Mm.
Like, Tennessee is not often going to get top 30 guys, but they are the masters of getting guys ranked like 50 to 150, which is huge for the program.
Absolutely. We end on this. Auburn, next up in our Kim Pom Top 25 Season and Review.
My series. Favorite team.
Your favorite team, Bruce Pearl. Shout out to our old friend Bruce Pearl here in Knoxville, Tennessee, looking over at his sign, poster, and photos to my left. One day in the next house, it will be on behind me on these shows. But Will, Auburn. Great team. Jabari Smith, a lot of fun to watch for this group. He's done a great job recruiting at Auburn. Sharif Cooper, putting dudes in the league. Fun atmosphere. Like, the number one thing I think about Bruce Pearl, though, is just, like, what he brings to your university. Mm-hmm. Where Auburn basketball, I mean, it is already small. It's a small venue. People did not care about basketball on the Plains forever. It was a tough place to get buy-in. And the energy that he brings, it's just huge. Like, he's been better for the program, he's been better for the SEC, he's been better for the sport. Having Bruce Pearl in the conference is fun. He sweats a lot. The man sweats. And Auburn is a really, really good basketball team. Do we know if they'll ever win a title with Auburn? Man, it's really, really hard to win a national championship in college basketball. It's very, very hard. That being said, he's done, I think, an extremely good job at Auburn since getting this job. And I think he's actually, now that we're looking back on it, I don't think it was all that exciting of a hire. If we go back, hindsight being 2020, where it's like, this is kind of like Auburn's just taking a fly in the dark. Just like, we'll see, this guy bent a lot of baggage. Like, this is a last hurrah. Like, this is not going to go well. Like a Gillespie type situation at Kentucky. Maybe there was a little concern there, and no, he's just been great, and Auburn is in the best basketball shape they've been in decades. And I don't know. I think he's actually been better than I thought. I never thought Auburn would get to like a Final Four favorite type team at any point. And Pearl's gotten them there.
Yeah. I think he's done one of like the 10 best coaching jobs of the last decade. Because you and I are old enough to remember that like it used to be a huge deal when Auburn made the NIT.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was massive when they would go over 500 in SEC.
Like, Marquise Daniels is like the only name that popped up over like a 15-20 year time span where you're like, did that guy go to Auburn? That Dallas Maverick wing, was he an Auburn guy? I don't recall Auburn.
My real SEC Barkley. Basketball heads remember Dwayne Reed, for Botany Barber, those guys. Yeah, for sure. I mean, they were so bad for such a long time that it was stunning when they rose back to the top. And it was like, it's a real credit to Pearl that he took them from those steps. But last year was sort of the pinnacle, even more than the Final Four run, I think, because, you know, that Final Four team, they were great and honestly on the same level as last year's team, but they didn't have the same regular season sustained success where it's like, yes, I mean, they had like some good moments, but you're not number one in the country. You're not 22-1. You're not 10-0 in SEC play, et cetera. And I mean, they had a great season. They ended up, you know, closing in a poor manner, you know, lose five of your final 11. The tournament, neither tournament really goes the way you had hoped. But this was a team that was better than I anticipated they would be. And I think it was more or less on the backs of two guys, Jabari Smith and Walker Kessler. I had the feeling Kessler would be, you know, better than he was at UNC because of, you know, he didn't play much at UNC. But I did not anticipate Kessler would be the literal best rim protector in college basketball or one of the most efficient offensive guys in college basketball. And Jabari Smith, you know, we saw it when he came to TBA. That dude, you know, very likely to have a great NBA career, was a top three pick for a reason, SEC Freshman of the Year, et cetera. Amazing basketball player. Those two dudes, I mean, like, the rest of what Auburn has is pretty solid. Don't get me wrong. Like, Wendell Green is an interesting point guard. KD Johnson, despite being my enemy, very good basketball player, especially just a terrific defender. Honestly, one of the best perimeter defenders the SEC has seen in forever. They've got some dudes and like some exciting players, but it was Smith and Kessler that really kept them rolling. And so I don't know. They're a fun team, right? You know, even as a Tennessee fan, you could sit back and say like, oh, this Auburn team, pretty darn entertaining to watch when they're rolling. And what ended up being their downfall was, you know, pretty obvious. 269th in three-point percentage. That'll do you in when you're in the NCAA tournament. A tournament that is decided by shooting more than anything else. So, and just, it never really got better for them because Auburn... The thing that happened late in the season, I'd have to dig up the stat again to find it, but it was something like after mid-January, Jabari Smith was the only player in the Auburn roster to shoot better than 30% from three. And when every team you play knows that, and they can just double Jabari, that really limits what you're able to do offensively. And they never figured out that counter.
Why do you think that was, though? Why do you think they've actually kind of really struggled with this aspect? Because I don't, like, do you see a lot of similarities between walls he ran into at UT?
I actually do. They reminded me an awful lot of, strangely enough, the Tennessee team that went to number one, 2007-2008, where that team, frankly, both teams were really lucky to get to where they were. Like, Tennessee was never the best team in college basketball that year. There's not really a point last year where I thought Auburn was either. We were pretty consistent in saying they're probably one of the six or so best, but we don't think they're number one. Tennessee was in a similar situation. And so part of that is regression to the mean, but part of that is just Tennessee that year never had, like, aside from Chris Lofton and, you know, occasionally Juwan Smith, an obvious consistent knockdown shooter. And that got them into trouble in the NCAA tournament, bounced them early from the SEC tournament. Kind of happened the same way with Bruce at Auburn this past season, where they were tenacious defensively. They just didn't have it offensively on a lot of nights late in the year. So I don't know. The next pivot for them is going to be really interesting for, you know, it's post-Smith, post-Kessler. They're still recruiting really well. Obviously, they have Johan Traore on the roster this year. But now, I mean...
Well, how big of a drop-off do you see them having this year?
It's tough because I think Auburn is still going to be very good. I think they'll be top 20. Like, if I had to name a number in my mind, 17th feels right, which is in that range of, like, you're still really good, but you're probably not a national title contender. And given how good the SEC is going to be, you may not be an SEC title contender, at least in the regular season.
You could always just be Arkansas, though, where you're, like, hovering around 15, 16, and then you still make an Elite Eight run, a Final Four run.
And that's always possible. But, like... The biggest question I have for Auburn this year is when I look at the roster, I think they're going to be really good defensively again. I mean, Pearl's system has a floor that is really high if you're bought in and you're like, it's hard for me to envision them finishing the year outside of the top 20 in defense. Like, they're going to be really good defensively. But offensively, who's the guy? Is it really Wendell Green? Is it really KD Johnson? Do you want those guys running your offense late in the game? Because given what I saw last year, I don't think I do. Alan Flanagan either has to take a massive step forward back to where he was, or like Traore's going to come in way above expectation for a freshman at his level.
It's just going to be one of those where, I mean, I think we'll learn a lot more, where this is more uncertainty with this group. And like you said, there's questions of like, who will be the leader, but I think they'll figure it out. Like, someone's going to pop for Auburn this year. So there's talent. It's not like the cupboard is bare and he's recruited well and he's done well in the portal. Like, someone's going to pop. So if you had to guess who's not on the radar for Auburn that pops next for Pearl in this group, who do you think it is?
Johnny Broome, the transfer from Morehead State, or sorry, Murray State, or is it Morehead State? I can never remember. One of the states in Kentucky. I'm really excited to see play there. That was a great underrated get. He is an awesome offensive center. The problem for them is that center is pretty crowded between Broome, Cardwell, and Traore. I don't feel like poor Babatunde, I don't think, is really going to get much playing time this year. And then you've got Jalen Williams, who can always be a small ball five. So I think if there was a guy who'd pick to pop, it would hopefully be Broome, because he is quite a fun player. But that sort of leads you into another question of, like, how do you fix all of these minutes at center? Because, I mean, you know, we like to think that everything can be harmonious, every coach can hold together, but like, these are 18 to 22 year olds. Somebody's going to end up pissed off when it's like three guys who pretty much play the same position, pretty much have about the same shooting range offensively. I mean, like, Broome has never made a three in his college career. Dylan Cardwell hasn't. I don't believe Johan Traore is expected to come in as this, you know, above average shooter. So that's three guys that basically do the same thing. I mean, like, could Traore be good? Possibly out from out there. But I mean, like, I don't know. That's going to be really tough. I'm really curious to see them this year, because like I've been saying, that they do kind of remind me of an Arkansas in a way, where it's like the floor is pretty darn high. The defense is going to be pretty darn good. But there's going to be some nights on paper, at least, where that offense is going to make you really frustrated to watch them play. Like, I don't know, when they have to face off against Tennessee, or, I mean, they play at USC in December. That's going to be a really interesting game, given how good USC has been defensively lately. Like, I don't know. It's intriguing. I like Auburn. I don't know that I can get on the love scale with them this year.
That's fair. Will, do you want to end with a stat of the week for us? Do you have something for this as we wrap up here?
I actually have one that's I just looked up that is quite exciting. So on BarkTorvik's site, you can do like 4-year rolling averages of college basketball. And so he's got his thing called Barthag, which is more or less Ken Pom's thing. It's just like it's a little different. Over the last 4 years, you're obviously not going to be shocked to hear Gonzaga is number one. Can you tell me who the second best team in college basketball the last 4 years has been?
Give me 1 second. I'm thinking last four.
So this is like pretty sustained consistency for 4 years.
Kansas?
It is the Houston Cougars, number two overall. They're number one in quite a few things. Number one in effective field goal defense by far. Number one in offensive rebounding. Number one in three-point defense. Number two in two-point defense. They are, I mean, like, we
this
talk about
it. This speaks more to what I'm saying, man. Like, when they make the jump, like, the Big 12 hiring an NBA guy as their new commissioner was a great move, where the Big 12, like, you just put them in as the best basketball conference in the country. You put in Houston. You put in BYU. You put in Memphis eventually. Like, this is just going to be like building the ultimate basketball conference is the way to go. Like, I think this is a smart way of building.
Well, let's build off the stat I just read you then. So Of the top six teams the last 4 years per Torvik, four will be in the new Big 12: Houston, Baylor, Kansas, Texas Tech.
That's wild.
That's insane. That is going to be, I mean, like we literally just talked about it. The Big 12 is going to be the best conference in basketball this year. Wait until they have Houston and Memphis.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be a big time thing. I mean, BYU, I think, is still a sleeping giant in a lot of ways. And I think.
Realignment, frankly, still sucks. But don't get me wrong, realignment is for losers. But the fact that we're going to get Houston and Baylor and Houston and Texas Tech every year, and yes, like Houston, Kansas could be a rivalry one day. I don't see it yet. Memphis, Kansas kind of pops off naturally more to me as a potential rivalry. But either way, those in-state Texas rivalries coming back from like the Southwest Conference, awesome. We need more of that. Need those regional rivalries.
There you go. Stats by Will. We can go check you out on statsbywill.com. Bookmark that today if you've not already done so. Follow him on Twitter at statsbywill. Anything you'd like to plug as we wrap up here on a Thursday night, Will?
Nothing except Tennessee really better win this game, man.
They really
I
should.
don't have like much writing on it emotionally, but it's just like logistically in my head, you gotta win this one.
I mean, I will be. I don't know what I'm going to do. Like, this is the old man, me being 31, is I've already, like, just seeing how many people are going to be at this game and how much just chaos is going to unfold either way. And Knoxville wins, it burns. If they lose, it burns. I don't know how I'm going to get home, Will. Like, with getting out of the building and, like, how long I'll be in traffic, like, how I really want to, like, have someone, like, because Uber's not a thing here. Like, coming from Atlanta, you have these options. Like, you're kind of at the mercy of the situations around you. And I don't know. I might be trapped in kneeling, either really happy for a while and it won't bother me as much, or really sad where I'm like, all I want to do is go home and sulk, and I am stuck in this hellhole for a solid 2.5 hours because we can't get out of here. I don't know what I'm going to do in terms of the car stuff. I've thought about that way too much over the last couple of days. It's like how to do this, because I kind of want to just be like, can I pay somebody to like be a Uber drop off and pick up for like, hey, do you want $100 to take time out of your Saturday to just pick us up and take us home so that we can get out of all of this craziness? But I don't know. It's gonna be wild.
About to make me go on a public transit rant here.
Uh-oh. I mean, hey, like, as someone who grew up with MARTA and so many takes on MARTA back in
So
Atlanta,
jealous.
I have all kinds of public transit takes if you want to go down that road. Will, thank you as always, my friend, and I will talk to you.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.